Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Muslim Women in Finance podcast. We're doing something a little bit different this week, and we're sharing a recording of a webinar we did with Sharia Portfolio. So we hope you enjoy the show.
Assalamu alaikum again, and thank you for joining us here today. My name is Rizwana Abid, and I'm an investment advisor representative at Sharia Portfolio. For those of you who might not be familiar with Sharia Portfolio, we're a full-service wealth management firm dedicated to provide Sharia-compliant investment solutions for Muslims. We've been in business since 2003, and we're headquartered in Lake Mary, Florida. However, we serve clients all over the United States and have also expanded our operation in Canada since last year. We have a very exciting session planned for all of you today, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you all to an all Muslim-led panel discussion on personal finance, where we will discuss themes relevant to the topic of personal finance, anything relevant to this topic, really budgeting, what it is, why it's necessary to have one, and also discuss the importance of saving and investing. Before we get started with the discussion, though, I'm going to talk a little bit about the standard disclaimer. It's basically stating that, any Sharia Portfolio webinar and the content that we might share in this during this webinar are for informational and educational purposes only. They're not intended to be construed as investment advice. If you might need personal consultation, please feel free to email us at info@shariaportfolio.com or call us at 1-888-HALAL-STOCKS. And, one of our licensed professionals will be happy to get in touch with you and answer any of your queries. Lastly, I wanted to remind everyone that we have a Q&A session planned at the end of the webinar. However, you also have the option to submit any queries you might have throughout the webinar using the chat box. Please note that a recording of this webinar will also be made available for anyone who has registered but, was unable to attend. Without further delay, let me go ahead and introduce our two very inspiring and empowering panelists for today's discussion, Lisa Hashim and Amira El Namara. So Lisa is an electrical engineer patent examiner. She has conducted workshops and financial coaching sessions for Muslim women. She is also the moderator of the Facebook group Muslim Women and Finance and a co-host for the podcast Muslim Women and Finance. Amira is a director of clinical services and nurse practitioner in long-term care. She is also a co-host of the podcast Muslim Women and Finance. Her passion for personal finance is fueled from recognizing the gaps that exist among Muslim youth and particularly women. She hopes to empower and educate individuals to take controls of their personal finances and increase their financial literacy through lived experiences. She lives with her husband and two daughters, aged 5 and 2, in southwestern Ontario, Canada. So thank you, Lisa and Amira, both of you, for joining us and for being with us here today. We really look forward to learning from your experiences and insights that you'll share with us. Please go ahead and let us get started. The floor is all yours.
Jazakallah khair. Rizwana, thank you for a lovely introduction. Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and thank you for joining us this evening or early afternoon. So I did want to start off by kind of highlighting some facts about personal finance and then why it's so important for Muslim women. When you think about personal finance, money decisions are made on a daily basis, and it can create an opportunity for conflict within the home naturally. So things like groceries, everyday expenditures, eating out, and the way we approach money is part of who we are. They talk about your money story. It's how your parents raised you. And so naturally, when someone disagrees with this in our household, and be that somebody close to us, our partners, you can feel personally attacked sometimes, and you feel like it's a judgment on your character. And so that can kind of set ill-defined roles in the home, and that can also lead to conflict. And so We do want a balance in the home and healthy dialogue around personal finance in order to promote a healthy home, which we need for a healthy ummah. So, some more statistics regarding healthy homes. According to the Rutgers University National Marriage Project, the American divorce rate today is more than twice than that of 1960. And that has declined since hitting the highest point in the country's history in the early 80s. But overall, close to 50% of marriages started today will end in either divorce or permanent separation. And in Canada, the divorce rate is about 37%, so not too far behind. The last study done within the North American Muslim community was actually conducted in the early 90s, and I would be curious if there's been anything done since then, with the Muslim divorce rate sitting at about 31%. Many community leaders and imams do confirm that that now is likely higher. And I bring this up because one of the main causes for divorce, including in Muslim women, in Muslim couples, is finances. And, I'll be the first to say that personal finance is as simple, but it's not easy. And so it takes a lot of work, a lot of dialogue, and a lot of educating self on how to approach these things. It's as simple as spending less than we earn and saving the rest. So, how do we do that? We make a budget. And I'll kind of go into a very basic definition of what a budget is. And so a budget is a formal or informal document of estimated income and expenses for a set period of time based on future plans and objectives. And I find that, we get the planning part, but we don't get, well, we get the tracking part. So I often find that when we start to look closer at our personal finances, we seem to have the, in and out, but then we really miss the mark when it comes to future planning and objectives. And that's key. Budgeting is not tracking. And tracking is helpful, yes, but tracking is just going to be showing us where our money has gone in a retroactive way. And so the key to shift our focus is to become more proactive. So I'll kind of, that's kind of an introduction to what budgeting is and why it's so important in the household. And I'll kind of send it over to Lisa to see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, with budgeting, it's like the basic building block in your financial portfolio. So in association with budgeting, you want to have short-term and long-term goals because you want to know, yes, the money's coming in, the money's going out. Where is it going? Where is accounting for every dollar and how it's being used? And then what are my goals in life? Short-term could be, for example, I want to buy a home in 3 years. I want to save a healthy down payment so I can pay for that home. Or long-term goals could be I want to go to Hajj in 8 years. And so therefore I need to have a savings plan. So with budgeting, the key thing is organization, organizing, what is coming in, what categories is the income going into? And then after all the expenses, what buckets can I put the money in so that I can save and invest so I can build my wealth? And a key there is wealth building. There are different ways to do budgets. You can do a daily budget to kind of monitor how you're spending every day, or you could do a monthly budget to kind of see where the income is going. And when you utilize that into your personal audit, which I like to call it a personal audit, because you're really trying to hold every dollar accountable and to see, where can I save? Where am I overspending? It's often said that, if you look at someone's credit card statement or their bank statement, you can kind of tell what type of person they are. But in addition to that, women, a lot of women are money managers in their households, whether they're money managers individually or in a family or as an individual with children. So that's why it's so important to get women on board and kind of relay this financial literacy component to them so that they can find ways to save in order to invest it for the future. So as far as budgeting, I know, Amara, you have used innovation to help you budget. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I was looking for a way to really simplify our budget process. I was finding, Excel spreadsheets. I found that a little bit too overwhelming for myself. And so I did look for software apps and things like that. And I did come across an app And I'll mention it here. I'm not in any way affiliated with it at all, but it's called You Need a Budget. And it's based on like a zero-based budget when it comes down to the type that they use. And it's essentially giving every dollar a job. And so not only does that mean that you're spending every dollar, but you're also assigning it for goals for the future, whether that's short term, or long term, like Lisa mentioned, whether that's Hajj in like 5+ years, or if you want to go on a trip next year, every dollar is assigned to a category. And then it's all electronic or, syncing across multiple devices. My husband has it on his phone. I have it on my phone. You know, he goes to get gas, he puts it in his budget, it syncs with mine, and we're all on the same page. I think that's really key. Whatever you find or whatever method works, there's a couple of different budgeting methods out there. You know, as long as everyone's on the same page and it works for the household, that's key and that's important. There's also the anti-budget, which is the most relaxed of budgets. I know sometimes just even thinking about budgeting is kind of overwhelming for individuals. So the anti-budget is really more where you're allocating the amount that you need for your savings target. It's kind of like the pay yourself first. You put all your money into the savings and what you want to save and your bills and all your necessities. And then anything left over is basically yours for, dispensable income. And so that's the most relaxed way. It just depends on, I think, personalities too. And you have to know yourself. And a lot of that, is tied to behavioral finance and things like that to know what might work for you and your family.
Yeah, there's so many categories. The largest category is the housing, whether it's a mortgage or rent, and that's usually where most of the money is going. But I dare say that the student loans is catching up, and those are as large as a mortgage or rents. And that's an issue because the student loan debt is a debt that needs to be repaid, and there's usually some type of financial charge or fee associated with that. So what we want to try to do is when we look at our budget in the different categories, I just mentioned housing, but also utilities, the internet service provider you have, food, household groceries, and then miscellaneous spending, quarterly expenses like insurances, the car insurance, and then other things like clothing and education for children. The credit card debt, the transportation payments, such as gas, car insurance, or even the car note that's being paid. Taking all those into account, breaking them down into categories, seeing how much of your income is going into the categories, and then whatever is left over, try to put into that saving emergency fund or investing category. Knowing where every dollar goes is going to make it. Again, it's going to be streamlined, it's going to be organized, and then you can figure out what do I have left over after the expenses that I can put in. It might be $125 a month, for example. If I have that monthly, then I can go ahead and put that into an investing account. Now, people who already do that, they might want to get a little creative and start, investing weekly or investing, twice a week. And that again will just speed up the process of saving and investing. And what you're trying to do with the budget is you're trying to see if you can free up between $15 to $200. But after you look at your budget and you realize, you know what, I actually need $1,000 more a month to hit all my goals, such as retirement and my emergency fund and and to also cover my short-term and long-term goals in the future. That's where you might have to, consider if you can get a raise at your current job, switch companies. You might consider a side hustle or a part-time job. So again, the budgeting can maybe free up between about, $15 to $200 a month. But if you need a lot more income than that to actually meet your personal individual criteria, that's when you might have to consider temporarily having a part-time job, switching jobs, getting more education to actually increase your income after you're talking to your supervisor, for example. So those are some of the ways to kind of see why a budget is beneficial. When you're on top of things, you can automate your payments. Now, some people actually live paycheck to paycheck, so whatever is coming in is going out, and there's no means of savings. And, you know, the question becomes, are you okay with that? Because now we're seeing that individuals with six-figure incomes are actually living paycheck to paycheck because of those luxury items and luxury spending. And so the answer would be, you know, it just depends what lifestyle you have. People who are okay living paycheck to paycheck may not realize the value of having a savings and having a long-term savings for goals such as, you know, we mentioned HUDGE, but having a down payment for a home or paying a home outright, saving for their children's education, which is so important because the cost of education is going up extremely high every year. And so when you're looking at your budget, you know, you can see, where is the spending going? Am I really, you know, am I spending it to kind of because of FOMO and trying to compare myself to others who may have more income than me? And so once the spending is done, it's gone. I mean, you can't really get it back for things like clothing and other items. You can resale, but once the spending is done, it's gone. It's not benefiting you. So the benefit of the short-term investing and long-term investing is that it's growing. The money is growing for your benefit over time. And the more that you're able to put in to those type of categories, whether it's, you know, a real estate portfolio, stock investments, a child's education fund, an IRA, for example, that is going to benefit you in the long run. And with more money, you have more opportunities, more options, more resources. Do you have any comments on that, Amira?
You know, and I was just thinking, you know, for individuals that are kind of not sure where to start and or they've never really known where their money's gone before, I think it's just such a great idea to really write things down, put all those categories, you know, see where their money's going. And sometimes it's eye-opening, you know, and I remember when we first started budgeting, there were a lot of categories. I was like, why are we spending that much money in these areas? And, you know, when you talk about freeing up that $200 a month, sometimes you can even get quite a bit if you're going through each category and really streamlining everything. And I still, to this day, I find us, you know, going back and reevaluating, do we need this much money in this category? What can we do to, you know, shave it off a little bit? Because every area, you know, is a little bit of ebb and flow. And, you know, you can look at ways, you know, especially for kids. I know my kids, they grow out of their clothes like every season. And so it warrants us to look at consignment shops and buy on Facebook Marketplace. And it's great. And, you know, you're not consuming so much. And I think we have a big overconsumption problem, really. And it's time to like kind of go back to, I came across lots of minimalism posts and I've really enjoyed reading a lot of those. And so it's kind of enlightening to see how much we can kind of trim down when we really try.
Yeah. And the one thing is, it's like you work so hard for your income. Why do you want to give it away? Why not pay yourself first? Why not pay, make sure that you have enough for your retirement accounts? For example, if you have an employer-sponsored account, to make sure that you're at least receiving the match, which may be, you know, 5% of your income. And you can be flexible with that. You know, the goal is to probably save 15 to 20% of your income for retirement, but a lot of people can't do that because of things like credit card debt and student loan debt. So start small, at least get the match with your employer-sponsored plan. And then from there, you know, I think Sevaka is also something that's very endearing in our faith. You know, that could be something as well that could be at the top of the list. The top of the list of your budgeting, you know, a priority where you can actually give for the first time and not think twice about it. For people who live paycheck to paycheck, automated withdrawals for bills is a bit dangerous because you don't want to go in the negative for your checking account, for example. So the successful a way to gear how successful your budget is if you can automate all your expenses and not worry about it monthly and make sure that it's taken care of and covered. I wanted to ask you, Amira, for example, for foods, groceries, and households, if that's a category in your budget, can you just name some ways how people can save in that category?
Yeah. So again, I defer to a lot of apps to kind of manage a lot of these things. And they're mm-hmm. free. Like you can find them on Google Play and Apple Store, the iTunes Store. Obviously I'm an Android person, but apps like, so for example, we use Yumly. So it's basically like a recipe app. and you have the opportunity to, you can just like pull them into shopping baskets, and then you can plan your meal that way. I wouldn't say it's full on meal planning, but it helps me organize the types of recipes we're gonna, you know, make. Streamlining, knowing what's in your pantry and making recipes based on that. I mean, you can kind of really get involved as much as you want. You really have full control over how granular you want your shopping, you know, budget to be. We buy all of our groceries online and we pick them up at the store because it saves us time, because we are, you know, dual income household with two little kids. And so we do find value in our time. And so we find little things here and there, but we also are very mindful of what we're buying and spending, and we stick to a budget. So,
yeah. And right. And, you know, and then once you do that savings, once you free up maybe $50, you realize you're buying something you don't even eat, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you free up maybe $25 to $50 a month in that. And then you can put that into either, we would want you to put that into investing, because that's going to grow over time because of the concept of compounding. But if not, you know, maybe put it towards debt payments, or maybe that can be a charity category that's created with that small amount that you're actually saving now, when you realize that you're actually wasting the money on something you're not using. And so do you have any final comments about, you know, the budgeting?
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes we feel like it might be constrictive, and it kind of sounds like it will be because we're, you know, we're shaving here, we're taking off here. But really, like, if you think of your future plans and your goals, if you have big goals, if you want to retire early, like, we live the way we live now because we're planning to retire before we turn 50. And that's, you know, earlier than traditional retirement age. So we're working hard now, we save hard now, and it'll pay off later, inshallah, where we can enjoy our time a little bit more. You know, and that doesn't mean, you know, everyone is going to have their own comfort level with how much. It'll depend on your goals. So if you want to meet certain goals, then yes, your savings rate will have to be a little bit larger now, as long as you're able to maintain that. Then I think it's a really great opportunity to give yourself options, like you said, Lisa. And I think that's a great segue into, you know, investing and what investing is. And
before
I'll kind of
jump into investing,
go ahead.
I just had a relevant question with regards to emergency funds, and how much, you know, do you guys have any comments about, you know, how much one should have in an emergency fund?
So there is a general rule of $1,000 to start off. If you're just starting off, saving that $100 a month, if you can, if it takes you a little bit longer, that's okay. And I think beyond that, there's the goal to save 3 to 6 months of your bare down monthly expenses, enough to your necessities, housing, you know, whatever you need to survive. What are your thoughts, Lisa?
You know, emergencies are things like, you know, car accident or medical bill that just came out of nowhere. I mean, something that's unexpected. And therefore, you have to dip into the emergency fund to pay for that because you don't have any other slush fund around. So it's definitely something you don't want to touch. I think $1,000 is nice, but, you know, it depends on your income. If you are budgeting and you don't spend that kind of money, and you don't see that, you know, that could be risky to have in an emergency fund sitting there when it could be used for other things, you can start off with 500, 1,000. It depends on your household income. Obviously, larger household incomes might need more of a cushion, just in case someone loses a job. And that's why the 3 to 6 months number is a bit important. It depends on what if you lose your job and there's no income coming in? Can you survive on your emergency fund to pay for your mortgage and rent, to pay for the necessary utilities, and then to pay for your debts and other living expenses? So the number is just going to differ with other people. If you want to start at 1,000, that's great. And I wouldn't really stop at that number if you have a higher household income.
And I think it also, as you mentioned, depends on your lifestyle largely, right? It really is going to vary from one person to person, but seems like a hand of rule kind of is to have 3 to 6 months mm-hmm. worth of savings. Great. Mm-hmm.
So
Salam, fellow sisters. My name is Rizwana, and I'm an investment advisor with Sharia Portfolio, a halal wealth management company. It's exciting to see so many of you here growing and improving your knowledge of personal finance. At Sharia Portfolio, we help many individuals like yourselves to become prudent investors in a Sharia-compliant and ethical manner. I'd love to have a conversation with you to learn about your goals and explore options that suit your needs. So don't hesitate, give me a call at 510-684-5196 or visit shariaportfolio.com to learn more. Remember, you don't need to compromise your values because there is a halal way to invest.
Okay, so Amira, what is your definition of investing?
So I thought it was good to kind of first share what investing is not, because I know a lot of people, well, myself included, you know, before I educated myself, you know, I thought investing was really risky. Investing is not gambling. Gambling is A, haram, and B, you have the potential to lose all of your assets in one go. And historically, investing in the stock market, for example, over a long period of time will almost always give you a positive return. And there's going to naturally be dips, but long term, you're always going to, you'll see that chart climb upwards. So investing is, you know, to invest is literally to expend money with the expectation of achieving a profit or material result in return. And, you know, in terms of what we're discussing, it's, you know, finances, it's money. So, and you know, purpose of doing this is to achieve long-term goals, to sustain you in retirement, to help support household members, to help support your future generations, to help support, you know, older generations. So, you know, it does give you lots of options, as we discussed earlier. But what are your thoughts on investing, Lisa?
I think it's very important for Muslim women to invest, because of just the time that we're living now. And I'll give you a few examples. The gender pay gap. I mean, that's a real thing where you as a woman or a woman of color are getting paid less than a man, a male colleague who is doing the same job, who's at the same company, who has the same education level as you. And that's a real thing. And we haven't been able to break that barrier yet, unfortunately, but if you have less income than your male colleague, you're not going to have as much to invest. He's going to be investing at a higher rate than you. So that's something to consider. That's why it's really important to realize that that is, you know, that's something that's out there. Also, career breaks. More women have career breaks than men in regards to the maternity leave, in regards to caring for another family member, in regards to, you know, taking care of themselves after giving birth. And the maternity policies currently are not that great, depending on where you work and who you work for. And there's also paternity leave policies that are available as well. But if you have a condition where you have to take leave without pay, again, that's money that you cannot put into your retirement account. That's money you're not bringing home. So because of that, that's another factor that, you know, unfortunately is negative for women. It's a challenge to deal with that. Another consideration I would really like Muslim women to consider is that we are living longer than men, generally speaking, as of today. Women generally live longer than men. So then we have to think about, okay, if, you know, for example, if a woman is not working, she doesn't get a W-2, she's not employed outside the home, for example, then there has to be some serious consideration in what is the plan if something happens to the breadwinner, which most likely would be the husband or the father in the household. There has to be a plan, and that's how you get organized and understand. That's why it's important to understand your budget and how you guys are living daily and even monthly. So another concept I want women to consider is generational wealth. Okay. And it comes in two forms. Assets that you pass down after you pass away, which is inheritance, or assets that you give while you're living to your children, your children's children, so on and so forth. It passes down in the family. It's really important to consider that because a lot of populations in the United States have been shut out from passing generational wealth down. and have lived in poverty, you know, generation to generation. And we have to realize there are systemic institutions and systems that have prevented this generational wealth from circulating within families and being passed down. So that's something that we need to consider. You know, do we have a plan for that? You know, estate planning, wills, trusts, these are good ways to build generational wealth. Do you have any comments on that?
You know, you brought up how women are living longer than men statistically. And we just shared, we were talking about this yesterday, and we did a quick poll in our Facebook group on how many women, like who does the financial management in the household? And we saw, I would say over 80% of, when I just checked before we logged in, 80% are managing the household finances. So imagine, you know, if you're not fully, you know, fully aware of what's going on and you're not the breadwinner, like it's just so important for us to really see the big picture and to have a plan and to you know, execute that plan and ensure that everyone, including, and I think it's, you know, you want to take care of your kids, your children, your family, anyone around you. It's that generational wealth. And a big part of that is investing and knowing what it means to save now and save at least 10%, 15% more if you can. I think it's very important.
Yes. And, you know, for the women who are not employed outside the home, there is a spousal IRA that's available where your spouse can contribute to, for example, monthly, maybe $100 or $200, so that you are, you know, you're investing, even though you're not employed. And I think that's one consideration a lot of people don't consider when they're thinking of, well, retirement is only for people who work outside the home. And so that's not true. If you are married to someone who is working and you are not employed outside the home, you definitely have access to an individual retirement account. On top of that, just retirement is not the only way to invest. And I think what happens is a lot of people who have these retirement plans, they go into thinking, you know, I looked into the plan, I don't see anything for me. I don't see a plan for me. Like, I don't see any good areas or stocks that I could pick, because they tend to be restrictive in who you can, in what companies you can invest in, for example, what funds you can choose. And I think maybe Rizwana can touch on that, how Sharia portfolio could help in something like that. But being an ethical investor is really important to a lot of Muslim women. You know, I want to invest in a good company. I want to invest in real estate and make sure it's a good location for future profit, for example, or if I want to pass that down to my children. Being an ethical investor, you know, I think is amazing, because we have a tradition that's very high on giving to others, taking care of people within our community. And so the kind of psychology can really influence the way that you invest. And other ways of investing are real estate portfolio, you know, buying property that you can rent out. It could be residential or commercial, diversifying your portfolio. So that means that, you know, you're not only doing stock market investments in retirement, you're also doing the real estate. You're also building your own businesses. You're also creating passive income by other means. Some examples could be tutoring, you know, building a school and I just lost my train of thought, but other ways that you can make income. There's so many ways. Coaching, for example, childcare, creating your own catering business. There are so many ways that women who, if they're not employed with a company and getting a W-2, can make income and to push that into a savings, which would be investments, diversifying the portfolio so that if one area, like your real estate portfolio, goes down, the other could you know, manage that dip. For example, do you have any other comments you want to make on investing, Amira?
No, I think we've covered at least, you know, the general basic understanding of what investing is and how to diversify yourself. I think it can be probably overwhelming, you know, for individuals who may not know a lot about investing, and so I think it's important, you know, that we have this dialogue and. You know, and that's what I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do is really open that you know, open that dialogue for individuals to just have those open conversations and try to normalize some of these terms and get people used to make it the norm, right, to invest. So.
Right. Was one, were there any questions regarding any other topics?
There are really great questions coming in. So with regards to, you know, what we were just talking about in terms of, you know, how you go about selecting stocks, you know, and, you know, making sure things that you're investing in are Sharia compliant, you know, what are some ways to go about doing that? So, you know, I'm happy to answer that question. And I think it's a really legitimate concern for us as Muslims, right? Because, you know, our faith kind of, you know, we have certain restrictions and moral codes that we have to follow in Islam, you know. So some of the most basic, you know, ideas, you know, most of us are kind of familiar with, you know, in the sense that, you know, you cannot be investing in companies, you know, that are kind of participating in non-permissible activities such as, you know, alcohol, gambling, weapons, tobacco, adult entertainment, pork products, any other kind of entertainment related venues. So, you know, that's sort of like the broad idea that, you know, like these are the kind of companies that you might want to stay away from. But then there are also other financial kind of screening and criteria that companies have to meet in order to make sure that they are Sharia compliant. So because, you know, like we as individuals, we're not Sharia scholars, we don't know, you know, Hadith, you know, like so well to be able to give verdict on this matter. So, you know, we have to follow some sort of ruling that, you know, the scholars have prescribed. So at Sharia Portfolio, what we do is we follow the guidelines by IOFI. They are a Islamic finance governance setting body that, you know, basically give rulings on these matters. And they're considered sort of the gold standard for halal investing, making sure, you know, that investments are being done in a Sharia compliant manner. And some of the criteria, so of course, you know, first thing is making sure that, you know, we're investing in stocks, right? Stocks, which represent sort of a partnership in a company, they are permissible because you're taking part in profit as well as loss. You know, anytime they're profiting from their activities, you're taking part in that. You know, if they're making losses, you're also taking part in that. So that is completely permissible. So common stocks are permissible. Preferred stocks, which I won't go too much into detail about them, they're not permissible because there is they operate more like bonds and they have a fixed income component to them, which makes them like haram, like riba. So as long as you're investing in Sharia compliant stocks and halal ETFs and mutual funds, and there are so many of them available now in the market, you know, like there are at least three that are affiliate company. SP Funds has SPRE, SPUS, SPSK, and then there are many, many mutual funds, right, from Amana that I'm sure people are already aware of. Wahid has another ETF, right? So these are all Islamic ETFs that are eligible for Sharia compliance consideration, and if anybody wants to invest in them. The last thing I wanted to mention are the financial ratios. So, you know, the industries that we kind of already talked about, and then the financial ratios. So, you know, if somebody wanted to, you know, do these by themselves, if they had the time and the resource to research the companies and really try and find out, you know, what kind of businesses these companies are in, you know, operating in, where their primary and secondary sources of revenue are coming from, what their annual report looks like, they would try and figure out some of these ratios that have been mentioned and, you know, have to be followed as part of the IOF guidelines. So I'm just going to mention some of them briefly. You know, if anybody is interested in learning more, you know, they can always reach out to us. So three of them are that in the interest bearing debt over the 12-month average market capitalization should be less than 30%, cash equivalents and receivable over assets should be less than 30%. And then cumulative revenue from non-compliant activities and non-operating interest income should not exceed 5% of total income. So I think because the understanding is that we're not in Islamic countries, you know, it's not a Sharia law that we're operating in. So they have made some provisions for some of these, you know, financial ratios where, you know, like if you, as long as you're staying within these limits, you know, it's permissible to be able to participate in these companies. And then the kind of the 5% rule that I mentioned with regards to how much of the company's income is coming from non-compliant activities, I just want to mention that there is a purification that one needs to, purification process that one needs to do in order to make sure that they are kind of giving away whatever percentage of the revenue is coming from this non-compliant sources, give it away to charity. So that's, you know, that kind of takes care of the cleansing process for, you know, even if a company is kind of investing or getting some of their revenue from non-compliant sources. So that's just something I wanted to mention.
There was a question here that refers to the mental health aspect of investing and referring to anxiety-inducing investment apps. So I think even more so in the last few years, we have seen a gamification of, you know, picking stocks and seeing that increase, especially among our millennial and Gen Z populations. And so maybe, Rizwana, you can touch on maybe what kind of options does Sharia compliant or does Sharia portfolio have in terms of, you know, allowing individuals to invest in kind of a set it and forget it approach? This is how I invest. I kind of set it and forget it, and it's automated and it's easy, and I try not to look at it, and I'm happy with that. Alhamdulillah. So maybe you can touch on that a bit.
So yeah, if you are somebody who wants to do this by yourself and you're not really interested in you know, obtaining advisory services from a wealth management firm or anything of that sort, you know, you are absolutely able to do it by yourself if you invest in the funds that I just mentioned. So as long as you're investing in the Sharia compliant funds, right, the ETFs that are rather low cost, but they allow the benefits of diversification, you know, I think they're a great way, and they have, you know, like, we have like, all these different types of, funds, right, in the market available now, right? You know, whether you want to participate in real estate, you only want fixed income in your portfolio, or, you know, somebody who thinks they're prone to taking a little bit more risk, and, you know, like they want to be investing in equity, right? I think funds only portfolio, you know, if you want to kind of like invest, you know, depending on, once again, you know, your investment strategy, whether you are somebody who is, you know, prone to being more aggressive, moderate or conservative, you know, you kind of like determine what type of allocation would be great for you, would work for you, and then kind of choose a funds only portfolio where you're only investing in these low cost ETFs or more actively managed, but, you know, maybe a little bit more costly mutual funds, right? You don't have to, you know, you invest in these funds and then, you know, they kind of grow on your own and you don't have to really worry about, you know, worry about them the way you would have to for an individual stock. Because, you know, as we mentioned with individual stocks, they're great, but at the same time, you know, they're more risky. You always have to make sure that they are maintaining Sharia compliance at all times. Right? It's not just a matter of purchasing a security that was Sharia compliant when you bought it, but we always have to continuously monitor these holdings to make sure that they are maintaining the Sharia compliance aspect at all times, right? Otherwise, you have to get rid of them. So for somebody who wants to go with the kind of like set it and forget it approach, I think the funds only model can be a great way to do that.
There's a question here, thoughts on cryptocurrency. And I would just like to answer this, not my personal thoughts, but I did find a great resource, Sheikh Yasser Qadi out of Texas. He's a mainstream Muslim scholar in the US. And he did a podcast episode, or I think it's also available on YouTube. And it's a good, I think, hour long regarding cryptocurrency and the most recent Islamic position on that. And what I took from it, and everyone, I invite everybody to go listen to it for themselves, is that, they go with the approach that things are halal until proven otherwise. And as of this point, there are nothing to show that cryptocurrencies are indeed like haram to invest in, but again, always consult with a financial advisor before making decisions like that. So it's an interesting discussion, and for sure it'll come up more and more often as we start to see it more mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. Cryptos are very
hot topic. Yes.
So we do get questions about them all the time. And at the moment, you know, as you mentioned, because there are various debates, you know, regarding crypto and, you know, whether they're Sharia compliant or not, we do not directly participate in cryptocurrencies, but we do indirectly participate in cryptos, you know, through companies such as Riot Blockchain and others, like Tesla. You know, if you we have them in one of our portfolios. And so, like, if you, you know, directly participate in cryptocurrency is one way to invest in them, but then, you know, going indirectly through other companies that might be involved in, the ecosystem can also be another way of going about it. And that's sort of the route that we have taken until we have, like, until we hear from the Sharia scholars with regards to their compliance.
I just wanted to make a quick comment regarding the mental health, because there are a lot of people, let's just eliminate day trading in the conversation, but there are a lot of people who are constantly like checking the apps and checking the market and things of that nature. When we talk about budgeting and setting aside a bucket to invest, for example, if it's monthly or weekly or twice a week, I think one good recommendation is that type of money that you're putting in, you are okay with losing it. So if you're putting in $100 a month, you should be okay with losing that $100. So if the market does take a dip, you're not, you know, you're not overreacting to something like that. Again, the long-term investing is really the best strategy because of compounding, because of over time, we have seen the market does give you that profit of 8 to 10%, for example, if you follow the S&P 500 and how it's done the past 20 years. Following the herd is just something that most people are doing. You know, they hear from friends, oh, this stock is really good, I'm doing really well, I made this much money, and then people just start investing in that stock. And so I would definitely do my research into companies that, that speak to you and that you understand what that company is all about. Yahoo Finance is a really good site to look up companies and look up those tickers and figure out, you know, what those companies do and if they're ethical for you. You have your own values. Everyone's value system is different, even though we're all Muslim. So I think, you know, calming the nerves and just knowing that, you know, I'm investing for the long term I'm investing because I know that there will be growth and I will get profit. And I have these goals I want to achieve. For example, I want to retire and have $5,000 a month in retirement, in my retirement years, and I'll be okay. And, you know, you need to figure out, when do you want to retire? How much time you want your money in the market, your risk tolerance, things of that nature. And that has to be individual. I can't be what, you know, Jane or Joe is doing, because Jane or Joe has a different income than you. So I hope that kind of clarifies that, you know, you, if you're going to invest, you have to realize there is a risk. There will be dips in the market. But if you're going for a long-term strategy, that will benefit you and calm your nerves.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You know, like with investing, you know, we always remind any potential clients that, you know, like if you are in it for the short term, like things are bound to happen. You know, like there will be moments where you panic, you know, because markets, you know, as we all know, like they have cycles, they go through ups and downs. So unless, you know, I think investing only makes sense, you know, if you are in it for the long term. So at least, you know, 3 to 5 years, you know, if you have, if you're working towards a goal, so that is definitely absolutely like a major consideration and something to think about.
There is another question in the chat that I thought maybe Rizwana, you might be able to address regarding the 529 accounts being non-Sharia compliant. I'm not sure, does Sharia Portfolio offer a 529 plan alternative?
We don't offer 529 plans, Section 529 plans, as this sister mentioned. They are considered non-Sharia compliant because the investment choices are made by the state. And so you don't really have any option to choose, you know, where you're investing in. So, you know, that kind of, you know, us as Muslims, you know, put us in a sort of bind. So there are other options that you can think about, you know, when it comes to saving for your child's education. So custodial, like college, Coverdell education savings accounts, they're a very good option for people who have, there are some restrictions that comes with the Coverdell ESA accounts, such as, you know, the annual contribution limit is only 2,000 per beneficiary. So, you know, if you are, even if you're saving for 18 years, that only gives you so much to go on with, you know, like around 36,000, you know, just being able to contribute that much. But of course, you know, there could be growth that will happen in the account. But, you know, and then there are also some income restrictions. So, you know, as long as, you know, if you are earning more than $100,000 and you are, when it comes to tax file, if you are single, you wouldn't be able to contribute the $2,000. And then if you are married, filing jointly, if you have income over 220K, you wouldn't be able to contribute to a Coverdell ESA. So, you know, in some senses, the kind of limit options for you, but, you know, for those who are able and eligible, they're a great option to go with. Also, I wanted to mention the UTMA, Atma UGMA accounts, like people know them differently. They're also great options for people who are trying to save money, not just for their children's education, but anything that benefits the child. So, you know, even if you're trying to save for their wedding, to help them with the business, to help them, you know, with their down payment later in the line, a UTMA account is great because unlike the Coverdell ESA, where you have a $2,000 annual limit when it comes to contribution, there aren't any such limits. As long as you're staying within the $15,000 gift gift tax limit set by the IRS, you are okay. And so those are great options for anybody who is thinking about saving for children's education. And we just actually, Sharia Portfolio published a very informative article on our website that just came out like a week ago, where we talk about how investing isn't just for adults. If you have children, you know, like if you're thinking about your children's education, or, you know, if your child has some sort of taxable income or wages, you know, like from, you know, taking care from babysitting, from, you know, mowing the lawn or whatever, you're actually also able to contribute to a Roth IRA for them. So as long as they have earned income, you know, they can contribute to a Roth IRA. And imagine what that can do, right, when children have all the time, you know, like, when it comes to investing, right? They would be able to, even if you're only, you know, setting aside $200 per month over the course of, you know, their lifetime, that will grow to a few millions, right? At least. So that's a great way to go about it as well.
Yeah, you know, those online calculators that show the compounding over time are really good tools to use so that you can kind of complement, you know, how much money you can put in the investing bucket. Another thing is I've had sisters come up to me and they're so confused, like, you know, should I be putting away from retirement? Should I be putting away from education? I can't multitask, you know, they ask these questions. And I always use the analogy of how when you're on an airplane, they tell the parents, you know, put the oxygen mask on first before you put it on the child. Make sure your retirement account is open and you're funding it. As for the child, there are a lot of options a child can take in addition to the education savings fund to pay for college. They can work, they can get scholarships, grants, they don't have to go to a four-year Ivy League school, they can go to a public school, state school, they can start off at community college. The child has a lot more options in regards to education than you in your retirement years, because you cannot borrow from the bank for your retirement years. Mm-hmm. So I think you really need to, that's why financial planning is important for adults. And you do have to take yourself into priority first, that your retirement account is being funded first before moving on to the education account. And you can definitely do that at the same time. You can multitask.
There was one, I know we're kind of running out of time, but I did want to touch on one comment made above in the chat regarding employee-sponsored plans. And I know when you're at a workplace or a company that offers these employee-sponsored plans, it's hard not to take advantage of these matches, especially when you put it, you know, if it's a 4%, and it makes a difference. It completely doubles your investment. And so maybe we can touch on that and wrap it up after that, I think.
Yeah, a lot of people don't really know where the money is going, and they need to log into those retirement accounts and figure out what are those funds. Call up the brokerage. Where is my money going? What am I investing in? Send me all the paperwork. Send me the quarterly analysis. I think that's a problem where people get confused. Oh, is this halal or haram? But free money on the table is amazing for anybody. So to at least get the match is such a good idea. But Rizwana, I'm sure you deal with this a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. We do have, it's a legitimate concern, you know, for any, you know, any investor, anybody who's working for a company, you have the match and you want to take advantage of that. But also you're worried about, you know, being Sharia compliant. So there are options for people. I know a lot of brokerage companies, you know, like retirement providers now offer the self-direct brokerage option within their accounts. Where, you know, if you have that option, the self-directed option within your 401k provider, that they're making this available to you, you'd be able to go beyond the selected menu that they have chosen for you and be able to participate in stocks, ETFs, mutual funds that are Sharia compliant. So I always urge you know, anybody who comes to us with that query to make sure that they inquire with their 401k provider, HR, you know, whoever they need to talk to at work to figure out whether that is an option that is available to them. and Sharia Portfolio, if people want us to manage those accounts, you know, we're happy to do that on their behalf by coming in as a third party authorized advisor. Otherwise, you know, as I mentioned, and if you just want to have the option to enroll in the self-directed brokerage account, you're able to do that by all means and, you know, like buy those funds that we talked about earlier. Let's see, I believe, yeah, we have touched upon most of this stuff. I know there were like a lot of questions and concerns, you know, with regards to, you know, being able to, like, you know, making sure that, you know, you know what kind of stocks to invest in, you know, individual companies, you know, it's all very overwhelming. You know, I hope at least, you know, some of the stuff that we mentioned and the insights and personal anecdotes that you guys shared was at least helpful and informative and beneficial to everyone. If I am gonna put up our contact information here just to make sure if anybody wanted to get in touch with one of us later that they would be able to do so. So here we go. You know, I believe that concludes our webinar for today. Lisa and Amira, did you guys have any concluding remarks that you wanted to make?
I'll just go ahead and kind of share where individuals can find us if they have any questions or want to get in touch with us about kind of everyday budgeting or want to listen to more. So we have a podcast called Muslim Women in Finance. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get, you can download podcasts. And Sharia Portfolio is Alhamdulillah's sponsor for us. And so we are doing a giveaway right now. So anyone that leaves a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, they'll be entered into a draw to win an Islamic personal finance book. You just have to send us a screenshot of your review and you'll be entered. We are on Instagram, Muslim Women in Finance. You can find us on Facebook, Muslim Women in Finance, or you can email us for any specific questions or inquiries at muslimwomeninfinance@gmail.com, inshallah.
Yes, we wanted to thank Sharia Portfolio and Sister Rizwana in regards to creating a safe space for Muslim women to have dialogue.
It's been our absolute pleasure, and we look forward to working in future as well. All right. Thank you, everyone. Jazakallah khair. I hope everyone has a good rest of the evening and happy Islamic New Year to all again. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Bye, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum.
We want to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our show. Feel free to reach out to us at muslimwomeninfinance@gmail.com with any thoughts, comments, feedback, or questions. We would love to hear from you. And you can also find us on Instagram at hashed.fine, F-I-N, and at Amira E, and join the Facebook group Muslim Women and Finance. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and review. Thank you.